All right, Triple Sec, microphone sensitive. Microphone sensitive. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right, Triple Sec. So we left off yesterday. Today's daf is your base. We left off yesterday. Yud Aleph on the base, six signs up on the bottom. Obeis HaKnesses, Mimen Tamei B'Nigoy. So remember, we were talking about this idea. We were talking about mezuzah. And the discussion of mezuzah, which we're not finished with, morphed into a discussion about Sara'as Habatin, Sara'as in the home. So the Gemara suggested before that a shul, a Beis HaKnesses, is subject to the laws of Sara'as. So the Gemara says, is that true that a Beis HaKnesses is a time of Sara'as? What can you both learn? Yochol Yehu Batei Knesios or Batei Midrashos Matan Ben Goyim. One might have thought that shuls and Batei Midrashos should be subject to the laws of Nagoyim. Talmud Lomar, Uva Asher Lo Habayis. Therefore, the Torah says, and he to whom the house belongs. Me, Shemiyuch, that's the pasuk by neg, by Saras Habat and by Saras of the homes, where the individual comes to the Kohen. So the Gemara dashes from that. What do we learn from there? It's phrased in the possessive. Me, Shemiyuchad, lo. So this only refers to a home that belongs to an individual. Yatsu Elu She'in Miyuchadin lo. As opposed to these other homes, i.e., shuls and Bate Medrash, that ultimately do not belong to any one individual, but belong to the collective. So the Gemara says, so we have a contradiction. So one price says that shuls do get tzaras, the other price says shuls don't get tzaras. So which one is it? Lo kashya. Harabi meir harabon. The two reflects two different approaches. One is a remarry, one is the rabbanon. This sanya. Beis HaKnesses sheyesh ba beis dir lechazen HaKnesses chay b'mezuzah. So because the Bryce says if you have a shul that has with it an apartment for the Shamis, then lemais it's chay b'mezuzah because it has a beis dira. V'she'ein ba beis dira. And if it doesn't have an apartment in it, Rabbi Meir says you still have to put a mezuzah there. The chacham and poach and the chacham say your part. So we'll say apparently the Gemara is going to suggest fundamental machlokes Rabbi Meir and the chacham as to whether or not a shul is chayiv in mezuzah. And therefore, the two brysos are not a contradiction. One brys holds like Rabbi Meir that a shul requires a mezuzah even if someone's not living in there, as opposed to the chacham who say that it's potter. Be by same. Another possibility is hav harabanan. Both brysos reflect the view of the rabbanon. The low kashan is not a contradiction. Why? Had the isbe based dira, had the lesme based dira. One brys is talking about where there is a damasal within the shul. And therefore, again, it's chayiv in mezuzah. And one brys says, well, there is no damasal in the shul, and therefore not chayiv in mezuzah. V'boyisem, another possibility is, ha v'ha deles ba beis dira. The other possibility is that both brysos are where there is no apartment in the shul. Aye, so why would it be chayiv in mezuzah according to the chachamim? Take a look up top of your base. V'ha dikrachim, ha dikfarim. It's referring to shuls of different locales. One brys is talking about the shul of villages, and the other is talking about the shuls of cities. Now we'll say, what's the chiluk there? Take a look at Rashi. The Krachim Rashi says, Shehu makom shukim. Because again, the cities have a lot of marketplaces. Umiskabtsim sham mimakomos harim. Now we'll say, the understanding was, the chiluk between a village and a city, in addition to just the number of people that live there, was commerce. Major commerce, major business happened in the cities because the cities had the marketplaces, whereas the villages did not. So therefore, the Gemara says in the cities where you have, and now because you had the marketplaces in the cities, it means you had a lot of people coming there from other places as well. It wasn't just the indigenous population. So therefore, says Rashi, because there are so many people coming to the Krachim, therefore the shuls in cities, by definition, really are used by who? By not just people who live there, but by people from all over. As such, they have the status of public areas that have no defined ownership. As opposed to, Rashi says, the kfarim, kol bailov mikarim, vahari yikabeis hashutfin, as opposed to a shul in a village. Who owns the shul of the village? The villagers, right? And again, lemais, again, it's a clearly defined population. And therefore, again, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that perhaps that's the chilek. A shul that has defined owners, like a shul of a village, where again, you have a defined population, then that shul will have a chiyuv of mezuzah. Why? Because Rashi is like beis hashutfin. It's like a home that's jointly owned, which is chayv in mezuzah, as opposed to a shul of a large city, which really is used by such a diverse population, not just the indigenous population. And the assumption is that everyone who's able to use the shul has a shtickel ownership in the shul as well. Therefore, they won't be chayiv in mezuzah. So the Gemara says, one second. And therefore, we'll say again, what we would suggest based we're understand what we're trying to do over here. We're also creating a mezuzah tzara'as link. So we're assuming that essentially any home that would be chayiv in mezuzah would also be subject to the laws of tzara'as. So the Gemara suggests, because again, remember, mezuzah requires some level of defined ownership, and tzara'as requires some level of defined ownership. So the Gemara therefore is suggesting over here that essentially, according to this answer, we would say that just like shuls of villages are subject to mezuzah, they're also subject to the laws of tzara'as, and just like shuls of cities are not subject to the laws of mezuzah, They also will not be subject to tzara. So the Gemara says, really? Is that true? That the shuls of cities will not be subject to laws of tzaras? But we learn, achuzaschem. Rabbi say the pasuk by tzaras says, achuzaschem, eretz achuzaschem. Achuzaschem literally means inheritance. Achuzaschem metame b'negoyim. Rabbi say this is actually fascinating. Only land that you inherit is metame b'negoyim. Ve'ein Yerushalayim metame b'negoyim. But Yerushalayim is not metame benegam. Kivanach, listen carefully. This halacha lemaisa for you, right? So Yerushalayim is not metame benegam, right? So why is that? Listen to this. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Look at Rashi just a moment. In Yerushalayim metame benegam, she'ein achuz alahem. So what we're going to get into now is a machlokas about whether or not Yerushalayim was divided up among the tribes, or whether or not Yerushalayim was the property of all Klal Yisrael. See, here's what we see. In order to be subject to the laws of Tzaras, you have to be Ahuzaschem, you have to be inheritance. Now, what does inheritance mean? That your land was divided up by Yoshua and given to your particular tribe, your particular family. But if land is not Ahuzaschem, it is not subject to the laws of Tzaras. So the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Ani lo shamati ela makom mikdash bilvan. Rabbi Yehuda said, I never heard that Yerushalayim is not subject to the laws of Tzaras. The only thing I heard is that the Makom HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash, Har HaBayis is not subject to Tzaras. Ha, but for our purposes, Ha, Bate Kinesios, Ubate Midrashos, Mitamid Binagam, Ba'af Agav, the Krachim Ninu. And I will say, what do you see from this price? Huh? The Havamina is, what are the only things that are not subject to laws of Tzaras? The only things? Possibly Yerushalayim, and apparently everybody agrees on Har HaBayis. Harabais, because Harabais is not Achuzaschem. Harabais does not belong, again, we'll talk about this more in depth, but right now the Gemara is coming from the position Harabais does not belong to any one person or any one group, but it belongs to all clients, well, therefore not subject to those of Tzaras. What's indicated from this Gemara is, but shuls and Bati Medrash, whether they're in villages or whether they're in cities, are subject to the laws of Tzaras. So the Gemara says, Ema, Ema, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ani lo shamati ela makom mekudash bilvad. To which the Gemara says, no, you have to amend Rabbi Huda's statement. Rabbi Huda did not say ani lo shamati ela makom mikdash, rather, Rabbi Huda says, I only heard that the Harabayis is not subject to the laws of Tzaras. Rather, what did Rabbi Huda say? Ani lo shamati ela makom mekudash. Mekudash means what Rabbi was saying? Sanctified. So in this version of Rabbi Huda saying is, in my view, shuls and bati midrashos are never subject to the laws of tzaras. Okay, and we'll say, remember, this is going to be the ongoing machlokes with Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, with Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The Gemara says, b'may kamiflagi, what are they arguing about? Rashi says, Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbanan. What are Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan actually arguing about? So the Gemara says, Tanakama savar, the Tanakama holds, Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim. So also the Tanakama, which is also known as the Rabbanon, holds that Yerushalayim was not divided up among the tribes. Not divided up among the tribes. So the Gemara says, look at Rashi for just, well, no, we'll come back to it. Yerushalayim nischalka l'shvatim. Rabbi Huda holds, Yerushalayim nischalka l'shvatim. Rabbi Huda holds, no, Yerushalayim was divided up among the tribes. So therefore, Abosai, again, remember, going back for just a moment, the Gemara, therefore, when the Gemara said before, the Gemara quoted the Brisa that spoke about Achuzaschem. Everyone's going to agree that only something that's called an Achuza inheritance is subject to the laws of Tzaras. What's the definition of Achuza? So again, obviously 95% of Eretz Yisrael, it's clear. What about Yerushalayim? So that's a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon. Rabbi Yehuda says Yerushalayim was divided up among the Shvatim, and therefore again it is subject to the laws of Tzaras. The Rabbanan say it was not divided up among the Shvatim and therefore not subject to the laws of Tzaras. And in reality, this is a greater machlokes. This sanya. Mahaya bechalko shal Yehuda. I will say, listen to this. What was in the tribal area of Yehuda? And I will say, here's what we know, just to give you the visual. The tribal areas of Yehuda and Binyamin were right next to each other. Right next to each other. And technically speaking, both encompassed Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, what was in the tribal area of Yehuda? Harabais, Halishkos, Vahazoros. So what was in the tribal area of Yehuda? The Harabais, Temple Mount, Lishkos, the chambers of the Beis HaMikdash, Vahazoros, in the courtyards. Uma haya bechelko shel Binyamin. And what was in the chilik of Binyamin? Ulam, the antechamber of the Beis HaMikdash, Vehechal, and the actual Kodesh, Ubeis Kodshe HaKadoshim, and the Holy of Holies. Okay? Uritsua Haisa Yotza Mechelko Shal Yehuda. Listen to this. But just the way that the area was configured, there was a strip of land that went from Yehuda's portion into Binyamin, the Nechneses Lechelko Shal Binyamin, Uba Haya Mizbeach Banoi. So we'll say this is quite fascinating. So as much as we said before what Yehuda's tribal area was, for whatever the reason, the way the land was split, there was one strip of land that went from Yehuda's area into Binyamin's area. And amazingly enough, what was situated on that strip? The Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, Uba Haya Ubaya Mizbeach Banoi. Ubinyamin Atzadik. He says, okay, we'll say it's interesting that here the it's not often that Binyamin is called Binyamin Atzadik. The appellation Tzadik is usually given to Yosef. So it's interesting over here that Binyamin is called Atzadik. Binyamin Atzadik, Binyamin, that this is tribal Binyamin, Hayamitsta'er Ale Levala Bechoyom. And Binyamin was very upset, and they tried to absorb it every single day. And I'll say, what does that mean? They weren't actively doing anything, but the point is, they were upset because Binyamin, obviously, you see, just by the way, everything is divided up, has the dominant share of the major parts of the Beis HaMikdash. But Mamish, boom, this little strip of land is where the Mizbeach was sitting, wasn't theirs. So Binyamin yearned to absorb this strip of land each and every day, Shnei Emar, as the Pasuk says, Chofeif alav kol hayom. So we'll say it's so beautiful because chofeif literally means agonize. He agonized over it all day. So the Gemara understands that chofeif alav kol hayom, the agony of Binyamin, is a reference to the fact that the Mizbeach was not in his tribal area. So the Gemara says, chofeif alav lefichach, therefore, zochach Binyamin atzadik v'na'ase ushpizichon ligvura. Therefore, Binyamin merited, and he became ushpizichon. Abosai literally means the host of Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Shene emar, as the pasuk says, ubein kesefav shachin. That literally the shechina rests between his shoulders. Abosai, what does it mean? He became the host of Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Look at Rashi, ushpizichon shahaya ha'aron nason b'chelko. Because remember, the Aron, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, was in the Chilik, was in the tribal portion of Binyamin. So because Binyamin had such agony over the fact that this one little strip of land, I will say, remember, in life, you're not really permitted to be jealous of anything. There's only one thing you're permitted to be jealous of, and that's someone else's holiness. You are absolutely and even encouraged to be jealous of someone else's holiness and someone else's spiritual possessions. And the reason you're permitted to be holy, the reason you're permitted to be jealous of it is because if you're jealous of it, it will encourage you to acquire the same. I don't have to take someone else's. I could find my own, but that jealousy sometimes is good. So Binyamin is mamish jealous of his brother Yehudi, even though, again, he's got great stuff in his tribal area. He wants that Mizbeach. He doesn't get the Mizbeach, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the Shechina is going to rest in your portion. V'haytana. So again, remember, here's why we're quoting this, besides the fact that it's interesting. The Brisa clearly indicates that what? That Yerushalayim was divided. It was divided. There was a tribal area of Yehuda and a tribal area of Binyamin. The Haitana, on the other hand, the other opinion holds, Sabar Yerushalayim lo nischalko l'shvatim. And the other, so I will say, that would be the position of Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanus. Excuse me. So the Tanakhama holds that Yerushalayim was split up. And apparently Rabbi Yehuda would hold that it wasn't. So where do we see Rabbi Yehuda's position? And the other opinion holds that Yerushalayim was not divided up among the Shvatim. This is very interesting. You can't rent homes in Yerushalayim. Now we'll say, now what does this mean? You can't rent homes in Yerushalayim. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, so we'll say this other opinion. And again, remember, this would be Yerushalayim. So Right. So I'm sorry, this would be Rabbi Huda. So Rabbi Huda holds Yerushalayim was not split up for Shvatim. How do we know this? You can't rent homes in Yerushalayim. I've also understand what this means. When there used to be an influx of people 3 times a year into Yerushalayim, obviously people need a place to stay. So if you're a little entrepreneurial, you could come up with a great business. You open up a bed and breakfast, right? You open up a little hotel. So the Gemara says you're not allowed to rent space and you can't charge people to stay in Yerushalayim. Lefi she'ena shalahen. Why? Because it doesn't belong to them. I will say, what does that mean? If you own a home in Yerushalayim and it's yours, that's fine. But you can't charge someone else for the right to stay in your home. Why? Because Yerushalayim belongs to everyone. Yerushalayim belongs to everyone. And therefore, I will say, I mean, don't show up at the Inbal, sorry. Hey, but the point over here is Yerushalayim belongs to everyone. And therefore, again, I, as a resident, don't have the right to charge you if you want to come to my house. Reb Elozer bar Tzadok Omer, af lo mitos. Not only can you not rent space, you also can't rent beds. So I'll say, again, remember, so let's say I have an extra bed I want to rent, because you have to understand there was an influx of people. You're not allowed to rent the bed. Lefichach, therefore, what do we do? Oros kodshim ba'alei ushpazichnan notlin osan bizra. So also, and here is the issue. The issue is that lemaisa, if I'm opening up my home for the Ole Rego, it's going to cost me money, right? It costs me money to feed them, it costs me money to take care of them. This is where electricity bill is higher. So what do we do? So Chazal gave the right to the host to actually take the hides of the sacrificial animal of their guests. Remember, for kodshei kalim, the person who brought the animal, got to keep the hide. The hide was significant. So if I'm the balabas, I own a home in Yerushalayim, halavai, and you're my guest, so I can't charge you for staying at my home because Yerushalayim is your property also. But Chazal said, you know what? I could take the hides of your sacrificial animal almost as a form of payment for the hospitality I gave you. So the Gemara says, and actually the Gemara says, Lefichach oros kachim bali ushpezichnon notlin osan bizroa. I will say, notlin osan bizroa means what? I can take it by force, meaning I don't even have to ask your permission. I'm entitled to take it because of the room and board that I've given you. Amar Abayis, what do we see from here? Shmamina orach aral mishpak inish gulfa umishcha leushpizei. So we'll say, what do we see from here? We see from here that it's appropriate for a guest to leave his gulfa. Rashi says, gulfa kan kan shel cheres, literally earthenware jug. Umashcha, Rashi says, or behema. And mashkar is a hide. So Rabbi just says an aside, we see from here that you really, whenever you stay by someone's house, you really should give them something. You really should give them something, whether or not they're charging you for the right to stay there. You really should make sure to leave he says you should leave behind your earthenware jug, and you should leave behind the hide of your animal, meaning that your host took care of you. You should make sure to be makir tov and leave them something. So also the point over here is we have a fundamental machlokes as to whether or not Yerushalayim was divided up among the Shvatim or not. And the Nafkaminos obviously are many, but for our purposes right now, the Nafkamino would be is whether or not Yerushalayim itself is subject to the laws of Tzaras. Yerushalayim is only subject to the laws of Tzaras Abad, the Tzaras of the homes, only subject to the laws of Tzaras if what? If it was divided up among the Shvatim. But if it wasn't divided up among the Shvatim, then the Maaseh, it's impervious to Tzaras. So that's the Machlokes. So the Gemara says, one second, we'll say now we're jumping back for just a moment. Because up until now, we made the assumption that everybody is agreeing that village shuls and villages, where you have a small defined population, therefore defined ownership, are subject to the laws of Tzaras. So the Gemara says, is that true? Is that true? You take that for granted. That's true. But we learned, La'achuza. The pasuk says achuza that it has to be an inheritance. Ad sheyich b'shu osa, and that the law, the land itself, is only subject to laws of tzaras when after you conquer it. Kav shu osa v'lo chalkua, but if you conquered it but you did not divide it, because lo chalkul l'shvatim, or chalkul l'shvatim v'lo chalkul l'beis avos, or you divided up among the tribes. Rabbi Moshe, remember, the way land division worked was it's not just enough to divide it among the tribes. What do you have to do? You have to go ahead and determine which family within which tribe gets what piece. So let's say, again, let's say you conquered it, but you didn't give it to the tribes. Or you divided it up among the tribes, but you did not divide it up among the families. So chilku lebeis avos. Or chilku lebeis avos, ve'in kol echad ve'echad makir es shelo. Or you divided it up among the families. But what? Not everybody knows exactly which is their parcel. Minayin, how do we know? Talmud minavosat minayin means, how do we know that in this case, this land, these houses would not be subject to the laws of Tzara'as. Talmud Lomar, Ubo Asher Lo Habayis. Because the pasuk says with Sarah Sabatim that he to whom the house belongs will come to the Kohen. We'll say, when do the laws of Tzara'as Habayis apply? When a person has clearly defined ownership over the home. Yotza elu she'en miyuchadin lo. So therefore, again, this comes to exclude one whose, again, ownership is not defined. Now, we'll say, bepashtos, this would come to include what? This would also come to include a beis haknesses tikfarim. Because a beis haknesses tikfarim, a village shul, would also, what? Doesn't also have clearly defined ownership. Now, what the Gemara is suggesting is that the definition of clearly defined ownership means what? Singular ownership. Or maybe even if it's joint ownership, unidentified partnership. But Lamaisa, once you have large groups of people, even if they're an identified group, Lamaisa, that's not called defined ownership, and therefore would not be subject to tzaras. So therefore the Gemara says, Alam Khabarta, rather it becomes clear, Kiddishnimekara, as we answered earlier. So we'll say, going back for just a moment, the way the Gemara ends this is to go back to what we said on Yud Aleph Amud Beis. So remember again, the reason why this whole discussion started was because we had contradictory brisos as to whether or not shuls are subject to the laws of tzara'as. The answer that the Gemara wanted to suggest is that the two conflicting brisos talk about two different cases. One is talking about a shul of the villages, one is talking about a shul of the cities. The Gemara has essentially refuted that claim, essentially indicating that even shuls of villages are not enough to find ownership to qualify you to put you in the parasha of Tzara'as. Therefore, how do we explain the two contradictory brisos? So there are two. So now the Gemara says we go back to our original answers. And our original answers were, number one, either one brisa reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, one brisa reflects the view of the Rabban. So therefore, again, it's not a contradiction. Rabbi Meir is the one who holds that a shul always requires a mezuzah, whereas the Chachamim say that unless it has a domicile, it does not. That's one possibility. Other possibility is that both prices are affecting the view of the Rabbanon. But what? But what? One is where there is a domicile in it, one is where there's not a domicile in it. So both sides. What comes out is we are left with two major machloksim. Machlokis number one is Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in terms of a shul. That Lamaisa again, Rabbi Meir says a shul is chayv in mezuzah. The Rabbanan says it's only chayv in mezuzah if it has a base dira. If it doesn't have a base dira, then it is not subject to the laws of mezuzah. And we also say the way we paskin halacha Lamaisa is like the Rabbanan, right? Really, meikar adin a shul is not chayv in mezuzah unless someone lives here. The minog is we put mezuzahs up in shuls. We put mezuzahs up in shul, but me'ikar adin, a shul does not require a mezuzah. So we paskin like the Rabbanon in that particular case. Number two, is Yerushalayim divided up among the Shvatim or not? And that becomes a fundamental machlokes. Is it jointly divided between Yehuda and Binyamin, or is it property of all? And the Maase again, the Nafkaminas for that are not just in terms of understanding tribal lines, but also understanding in terms of if I live in Yerushalayim, can I charge people when they come and they stay by my house for the regalim? So that machlokes is one of those machlokesim that endures. That's just the fundamental dispute that exists. Okay, weiter. Umaskina la kohen acher. So back to the Mishnah. What do? We go ahead and we establish a backup kohen gadol. So we're going back to the Mishnah now. So remember, we spoke about the sequestration preparation. Now we're talking about the fact that we make a backup kohen. So Gemara says, Pshita, listen to this. Pshita irabo psul kohen tamit shal shach. So we'll say, now here's what the Gemara is dealing with. If you'll notice, one of the things that we've had clear throughout our last 11 datum of this brisa is that there's a preparation process for the Kohen Gadol. So what happens if the Kohen Gadol becomes disqualified on Yom Kippur? How do we inaugurate, so to speak? How do we inaugurate the backup Kohen Gadol now as the Kohen Gadol? How do we do that? So the Gemara says, it's pshita, it's obvious. Let's say the Kohen Gadol becomes tamei before the morning offering is on Yom Kippur itself, before the morning offering is offered, mechan chin also become a shel shachar. So it's obvious the way we consecrate or inaugurate the backup, the skan, is how, by having it offer the carbon. So it's the actual offering of the carbon itself that inaugurates him into this service. Ela irabo psul acher. But what happens if, let's say, the Kohen Gadol becomes tummy after the Tamid Shal Shachar? So he's already offered the morning sacrifice, then he becomes tummy after. Now the Skan is going to become the primary Kohen Gadol. How do we inaugurate him, so to speak? But Avnit, what's the big deal? We go ahead and we put the Kohen Gadol belt on him. We put the Kohen Gadol's belt on him, and placement of the belt, by definition, inaugurates him into this service. So Mar says, okay, so the Gemara says, that makes sense according to the Mandam, who says that normally the belt of the Kohen Gadol is the same as the belt of the Kohen Hedjot. And we'll say, take a look at Rashi for just a moment over here. Hanicha, Lamadam Avneto Shal Kohen Gadol, Shal Kol Yimos HaShana, He Shal Kilayim, Kidichsiv Vesa Avnet Shesh Mashazar Utecheles. Zehu Avneto Shal Kohen Gadol, Shal Kohen Hedjot, Shin Chiluk Ba'avnatehem, Ika hekera biyom kippurim ba'avnet lefisha avneto shal kohen gadol mishkan biyom kippurim liyo shabbat. So we'll say, listen to this. So now the Gemara suggests the way we could inaugurate the skan is by putting on him the belt of the kohen gadol. The Gemara says that makes sense if you hold that what? That during the rest of the year, the kohen gadol and the regular kohen wear the same belt. They're both wearing a belt of kilai made of shatnez. And on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol wears a special belt just made of boots. Boots is pure linen. So then I understand how you can inaugurate the skan by putting the belt on it. Why? Because the belt is a unique beged of the Kohen Gadol. So by dressing him in the special belt of the Kohen Gadol, that in and of itself is his inauguration. According to the opinion who says, and we'll see this later on, that during the rest of the year, the belt of the Kohen Gadol was not like the belt of the Kohen Hedjot. That during the rest of the year, the Kohen Gadol wore a belt of shatnez, but the Kohen Hedjot, the regular Kohen, wore a belt just of plain linen. Then what occurs? Then on Yom Kippur, it turns out that what? That the Kohen Gadol is actually wearing the same type of belt that the Kohen Hedjot wears the rest of the year. If that's the case, then what? Then the placement of the belt on the skan Kohen Gadol can't be an inauguration. Because essentially what we're saying is on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is kind of dressed just like a regular Kohen. So dressing him in the regular Kohanic clothing does not vest him with Kohuna Gadol importance. So what would you do? So the Gemara says, Michael Neymar, Amrabai, oh, I'll tell you what he does. Lobesh Shmona, we put on him all 8 garments. For both, I remember, a regular Kohen wears 4 basic garments, and the Kohen Gadol wears 4 additional ones. So Abaye says, here's what we do. We dress him in full Kohen Gadol getup, and what happens? Umahapech bitzinura. And he goes over to the Talmud Shal Shach, and what does he do? He takes a fork and he flips it over. So also what does that mean? He hastens the burning of the Talmud Shal Shachar on the Mizbeach itself. And the act of turning it over is in and of itself a form of avoda. So I suggest get him all dressed up, let him do an avoda, and boom, he's just been inaugurated as the Kohen Gadol. Ukiz Rav Huna, Dam Rav Huna, as Rav Huna says, Zar Shahapech Pitzinu. Rav Huna, if a non-Kohen comes and turns over the carbon tamid, right, takes the fork and flips over the carbon tamid, he's Chayiv Nisa. Why is he Chayiv Nisa? Because he's been a non-Kohen who's engaged in sacrificial service. And Rav Huna, we non-Kohanim, those of us who are not Kohanim, as much as we yearn to do that, the Maisa, we're not allowed to. We're not allowed to. And therefore, again, it's a Chayiv Misa. So the fact that it's a Chayiv Misa indicates that what? That it's a form of Avoda. Therefore, Abaye says, get him dressed up as the Kohen Gadol, let him do a shtickel Avoda, he's just turning over the carbon, and he's the Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara says, Rav Papa says, I don't see why you're getting so excited about this. Avodaso Mechan Chaso. You know, why do you need a separate inauguration? He's going to do the Avoda of Yom Kippur. And it's the Avod of Yom Kippur that what? That consecrates him as the Kohen Gadol. That's it. Avod, look at Rashi. Avod asa mechan chaso. Avod asa Yom Kippurim atzma. She'ina kashira elu b'Kohen Gadol. V'ze uvda mechan chaso l'Kohen Gadol. And see, Avod, everyone's assuming that right now you've got to do something special to inaugurate him. Abai says, don't do anything special. You know what you have to do? Get to work. And once you get to work, by definition, the work inaugurates. Why? Because the work itself can only be done by the Kohen Gadol. So I don't care about the belt. I don't care about flipping carbon tumit over. Just get to work, and that inaugurates you. Milo Tanya, did we not learn? Kol HaKelim Sha'asa Moshe, Mishichasa Nikat Shasa. It was very interesting. All of the utensils that Moshe Rabbeinu made for the Mishkan, so when they were originally commissioned, They were all anointed with Shemen HaMishcha, with anointing oil. Mikan ve'ilich, but interestingly enough, from here on in, and I will say what it means from here on in, means anytime we have to build new kelim, anytime we have to build new kelim for the base of Mikdash, how do we consecrate them? Avodasan mechan chasa. The Gemara says, you don't have to shmir it with oil. What inaugurates Rabbosai? You have a work. Good. Also, by the way, it's an incredible. I also think there's an incredible. So too by the coin is of all the consecration. It's an incredible insight also into dynamic life accomplishment. People spend so much time readying themselves for things, right? They spend so much time planning and organizing and this. And what does the Gemara say? You know what the best way to actually get things done is? Get things done. Do it. Do it. I think it's almost like a mantra. Avodaso nechanchaso. It's your work that consecrates you. Planning is nice. Organizing is nice. Pontificating is nice. Right? All talking and vision, dreaming, wonderful. Avodaso nechanchaso. You want to accomplish something in life or become something great? Work, do it, get it done. You might have to revisit it. You might have to, pull back a little bit. You might have to try a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, the only thing that consecrates the individual is avodah. Amazing. When Rav Dimi came along, he said, "Avneto shel kohen gadol." So both sides, now that we spoke about this before, the belt, we're going to spend a little bit of time speaking about the belt. So Rav Dimi says, excuse me, "Avneto shel kohen hedjut." When it comes to the belt of the regular kohen. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon have the following discussion. Chad Amar Shel Kilayim. One said, and I will say again, obviously, the Kohen Hedjot only has one kind of belt. It's not unlike the Kohen Gadol, who has one wardrobe for during the year and one wardrobe for Yom Kippur. The Kohen Hedjot has a basic uniform. One basic uniform. And therefore, again, so one opinion says that his belt was made of Kilayim. His belt was made of Shatnez. The Chad Amar Shel Butz. And the other one said that his belt was made of linen. Tistayim de Rebbe hu de Amar shel kilayim. So we'll say it would appear that Rebbe is the one who says that the Kohen Hedjot's belt was made of kilayim. Why? Where do we get that from? Tistayim, because we're in the Braisa. Tistayim ein bein Kohen Gadol Kohen Hedjot ela avnet divrei Rebbe. There is no difference to the Gemara because the Braisa says that there is no distinction between the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot, except for the belt. Divrei Rebbe, these are the words of Rebbe. Rebbe Elazar b'Shimon Omer, af lo avnet. And Rebbe Elazar b'Shimon says, even the belt was not different. So take a look. Fine. So one more time. So the Sanya, ein bein Kohen Gadol, ein bein Kohen Gadol, Kohen Hedjot. There is no distinction between Kohen Gadol, Kohen Hedjot, ela avnet, except for his belt. Divrei Rebbe. I will say, I just want to point out over here, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Ki asa rabdimi amra avneto shel kohen gadol, Rebbe Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, v'lo gar slim yom kippurim, dav a kohen hedjot in chilip yom kippurim l'shar yomim. I will say, here's what's interesting. The way this discussion starts out is with the belt of a kohen hedjot. So Rashi says, like we just said before, when it comes to the belt of a kohen hedjot, there's no distinction of Yom Kippur during the rest of the year. Then the Gemara quotes a Braisa. And the Braisa says, there is no distinction between the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot, except for his belt. Now we'll have to define when this is talking about. These are the words of Rebbe. Rebbe Elazar b'Shimon says, Af lo avnet. There's not even a distinction between the belt. The Gemara says, Amos. So when is the Braisa talking about? Because the Braisa is creating a contrast. What time are we contrasting? If you want to say that it's during the rest of the year, then tuva ika. There are many differences between the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot. Kohen Gadol mishamish b'shmona, the Hedjot b'arba. Because also, again, if you're contrasting the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot during the rest of the year, there are many distinctions. The most notable distinction is the Kohen Gadol wears four additional garments for a total of eight, whereas the Kohen Hedjot only has four. Elalav b'yom kippurim. Oh. Rather than what must we be saying? We must be saying that what? That we're contrasting them on Yom Kippur. Oh, so then Rabbi said, then if we go back, then what is Rebbe saying? Rebbe's saying the only difference between the Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hedjot is what? Is in their belt. Why? What would be the distinction over here? Because also apparently Rebbe would be the one who would normally say during the rest of the year, both of them wear kilayim. Both of them wear belts that are made of shatnez. And on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol's belt is different in that what? He wears a belt that is made of pure linen. Of pure linen. So also remember how we started this before. This Gemara started with the Machlokes in Rebbe and Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. So one of them says that the belt of the Kohen Hedjot was of Kilayim, and the other one said it was linen. The Gemara said it would appear that Rebbe is the one who holds it as Kilayim. Why? Because the Gemara quotes the Braisa, and then the Braisa contrasts the Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hedjot on Yom Kippur. And Rebbe is the one who said the only difference between them is their belt, which indicates that what? That during the rest of the year, they both wore belts of shatness, like opinion of Rebbe. And on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol wore a belt of linen. So the Gemara says, Elalab Yom Kippurim Amri. Lo, the old one, maybe not. The Gemara says, maybe not. The old one, Bishari Mos Hashanah. Maybe the Braisa is contrasting Kohen Gadol, Kohen Hedjot during the rest of the year. What about the fact that the Kohen Gadol has all the additional four vestments? Ubahanoch de Shavyon. What the Gemara is contrasting, Rav Osai, is in the garments that they have the same. Remember, there are four basic garments that the Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hedjot have in common. They both wear Michnasayim, they both wear a Mi'il, they both wear kisones, and they both wear an avnate. I mean, Stephas and an avnate. So ultimately, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is we're only contrasting the begadim in which they share in common. So Rebbe is just pointing out that although they both wear an avnate, a belt, the belt is different for both of them. So the Gemara says, Ki asa ravin amar, avnato shal kohen gadol yom kippurim, divri akol shal butz. Now also comes along Ravin, and Ravin said, everyone agrees that the belt of the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur is made of pure linen. B'shayim os hashana. What about the rest of the year? Divri hakol shel kilayim. Everyone agrees that the Kohen Gadol wore a belt of kilayim. Lo nechleku ela ba'avneto shel kohen hedjot. So here Ravin comes along and says, listen, let's first we got what we agree on. What we agree on is that during the year the Kohen Gadol wore a belt of shatness. And on Yom Kippur the Kohen Gadol wore a belt of linen. So what's the machlokes? The machlokes is, what did the Kohen Hedjot wear? What did the Kohen Hedjot wear? And I will say, that's a machlokes both during the rest of the year as well as on Yom Kippur. She Rebbe Omer Kilayim. Rebbe says that the Kohen Hedjot wore a belt of shatnez. Rebbe Elazar B'Shimon Omer Shel Butz. And Rebbe Elazar B'Shimon says that it was made of linen. Rebbe will say, the Rambam Paskins, and you can see that's why the little letter gimel is there, that the Rambam Paskins, like Rebbe, that Lemaisa, a Kohen Hedjot, wore a belt of shatness during the rest of the year, like the belt of the Kohen Gadol. But again, whereas the Kohen Hedjot would continue to wear that even on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would wear a pure linen belt on Yom Kippur itself. Amra Nachma Yitzchak, Af Anan Nami Tanina. We also learn this. What does the Pasuk say? Al Bisaro. So also over here, the Pasuk is talking about the following. Pasuk says, V'lavash ha-kohen midovad. The kohen will wear a tunic of linen. U'michneseivad. Pants, linen pants. Yilbash al Bisaro. He will wear on his flesh. So both say, the Gemara says, Al Bisaro, not Talmud Lomar Yilbash. So we'll say the Pasuk is repetitive because the Pasuk says, V'lavash ha-kohen, V'lavash, Hakoyim midovad umichnesevad yilbash. It says lavash yilbash twice. Well, if it already says v'lavash, that he'll wear it. So I understand. Why does it have to say yilbash again? Matam alomar yilbash lahavi mitznefes va'avnet laharamas hadeshin Rabbi Yehuda. It comes to include the fact Rabbi said this pasuk is talking about trumas hadeshin. Trumas hadeshin is the removal of the ash from on top of the mizbeach. So Rabbi Yehuda wants to suggest that it says v'lavash a second time to teach you that the Kohen Gadol, the coin must be in full getup. Not necessarily Kohen Gadol, regular coin must be in full getup, full Kohanic garb to do the trumas hadeshin, to include the mitznefes, which is the turban, and the avnate. So it's not just enough to wear the tunic, and it's not just enough to wear the pants, but you also have to wear, again, the belt, and you also have to wear the turban. Right? Rabbi Dosa says, Lahavi big day kohen gadol biyom kippurim, shen kasherin lekohen hedjot. Most of it is very interesting. Rabbi Dosa says that the extra yilbash says what? That if the kohen hedjot ended up wearing the clothing of the kohen gadol from Yom Kippur, that it's kosher. They have all this kosher. Because we'll say, again, remember, the clothing of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur very much resembles the clothing of the Kohen Hedjot during the rest of the year. And therefore, Lemaisa, if the Kohen Hedjot ended up doing the Avodah of Trumas Hadeshen, wearing the clothing of the Kohen Gadol from Yom Kippur, that the Avodah is good. So the extra Yilbash comes to teach you what? That even if he wears something that is not his own, so to speak, the Avodah is still good. So the Gemara says, one second. Rebbe Dosa, hold up there for a second. Shei Chuvas Bedavar. I have two kashas on what you're saying. Chada, the Avneto Shel Kohen Gadol Biyom Kippurim, Lo Zehu Avneto Shel Kohen Hedjot. First of all, how could that be true? Because the belt of the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur is not the proper belt for the Kohen Hedjot of during the year. Why? The belt of the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur is what? Is Yom Kippur. Right. Butz, pure linen, as opposed to the belt of the Kohen Hedjot during the year, which is what? Right. Which is Kilayim. So how can you say that the Kohen Hedjot could wear the clothing of the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur when it's the wrong clothing? Va'od, furthermore, Begadim Shenishtam Shemem Kedusha Chamura, Tishtamesh ban kedusha kala. Furthermore, says Rebbe, one second, how can you say that clothing that were used for such a holy service like Yom Kippur can now be used for Trumas Hadesh? And I'm also saying, remember, removal of the ash is an important thing. It's an avoda. But Lamai says, not Yom Kippur. So how can you take clothing that was used on Yom Kippur and now use it for Trumas Hadesh, removal of the ash? Ella, mat, therefore, Rebbe says, mat hamulomar yilbash. What does the pasuk come to teach us when it says yilbash? Lerabos es hashichokin. You know what it comes to include? It comes to include even worn out clothing. Rabosai, I might have thought that Kohanic clothing that's a little bit worn out should not be used. And if it was used, the avoda would not be good. Kamash malon. We don't want you to use worn out clothing. But if the coin for some reason used the worn out big day kahuna, the avoda is still a kosher avoda. The Ozda, Rabbi Dosa Tane, and Rabbi Dosa goes according to his reasoning. And again, Rashi just points out over here, this is all for Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen was the act of removing a small amount of ash from the top of the Mizbeach. Remember, afterwards, ash was removed from outside the Beis HaMikdash. Now that was a messy avoda. To do that avoda, to do that work, so that they wore like, you know, civilian clothing for, that they did not wear big day kahuna. But for the removal of the ash itself, which was a relatively small procedure, because they didn't remove all of the ash, Lamai said that they wore big day kahuna. And therefore, Rebbe suggesting that the extra yilbash is coming to teach us what? That even if they wore worn out big day kahuna, the avoda is still good. So the Gemara says, Ve'azda Rabbi Dos L'tamei. Rabbi Dos goes according to his reasoning, Disanya Ve'hinicham Sham. You shall place them there. You shall place them there. So what does that mean? Rabosai, again, this is talking about the avoda on Yom Kippur. So the Torah says that Aaron will take off the clothing, the big dehabad, the linen clothing that he did the avoda from, when he comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, v'nicham sham, and he will leave them there. So what does it mean, v'nicham sham? Melamin sheteunim geniza. Oh, what are we seeing here, Rabosai? That the clothing that the Kohen Gadol uses on Yom Kippur, when he finishes the avoda of the day for them, what do? We bury them. We put them away. Tunim gneza. Gneza means we store them. We do not use them again. Rabbi Dosa Omer, shelo yishtamish pan yom kippur acher. And what does it mean? Rabosa? It means he doesn't even reuse it for the next Yom Kippur. That's it. It's a one-time use. Yeah. And after it's used, it's put away. It's pretty amazing if you think about it. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanon. The Gemara quotes a braiso. Tan Rabbanon. Irobo psul. Irobo psul. I don't know, so you know what? Actually, we're going to stop over here. We'll stop with this Tanur Rabbanan over here.
Why would this Gemara come on to worn out clothing and say that Gemara is a support?